Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, we buzz over to Warden to talk to beekeeper Kim Mueller. She shares her 3 years of experience with raising bees. We then talk to Lindsay Hoffman and longtime beekeeper Lonnie Larson, both members of the Yellowstone Valley Beekeepers. For Kim, it was many meetings with this group that provided the grounding and incentive to raise bees.
So in 2017, I purchased my first package of bees, which contained a queen and about 300 bees, and that was the start of my hive.
Well, when one buys bees, do you go online, at like you're ordering from Amazon, or do you call someone up, or how do those bees come to you?
There's several ways. The club I'm in has several apiaries, which are commercial beekeepers, that raise their queens and they sell packages to individuals. Or you can go online like I did, because I was too late to get a package through our group. And I went through the University of Minnesota, where they sell queens that are supposedly hygienic, which means they keep their hive cleaner. And if you grew up in Minnesota, you should be able to live in Montana too. So that's why I chose them. And they came in the mail one spring day, and that's how I started my colonies.
Well, that was good thinking on your part, that a bee was acclimated to actually the environment that you wanted to be in. So now you have your bees, and it arrived at the post office, and you went and you picked up the bees. But didn't you have to get things ready to bring home this whole family?
Yes. Months before I ordered my bees, I purchased all my equipment at Shipton's. Their brand is Little Giant, and I love that brand because the hardware is sturdy, and I did have a piece that broke on me. They replaced it without question. So, like I said, you start a couple months beforehand, like in February, go purchase your woodenware, and that's the hive body, the deeps, the screened bottom board. Anything that you pick up is just raw wood. So you need to bring it home, put a primer on it, paint it the color you want, and have it ready. So when you do get that call saying, Kim, your bees are here, then you can bring them home and put them right in their home, in their spot.
And how did the bees arrive in the mail?
When the bees are shipped through the mail, they arrive in a screened wooden box that allows airflow, but yet the screen is small enough that they can't escape. And in that little box is a tin can that's full of a thick syrup that feeds them while they're traveling. The queen is enclosed in a smaller capsule, and she's attached to the inside of the box. She doesn't need to get to the food because the workers get syrup for her and take it to her and feed her. And that way they've also come to know her scent, and it's one happy family when they finally arrive in the mail.
That is just very interesting. And can workers work for a queen that they may not necessarily have been brought up in the same hive?
I know there are cases where the worker is not familiar with a new queen, and they might try to kill her because she's foreign. But if she's protected in a cage after several days, maybe even overnight, they'll get used to her, and they will understand that she's going to be the boss now and all duties are for her.
Yeah, that she is in charge. That is just very fascinating to me. All right, this part would make me very nervous, but I know you did a lot of homework and you went to these meetings and you had mentors. So now you have your box of bees that you picked up from the post office and your hive is ready. Then what do you do?
There's a couple different ways to do it. The one that I chose was you get suited up, put your protective gear on, put your bee veil on, because you certainly don't want those bees in your hair. I chose not to wear gloves because I needed to have the nimbleness to open the box and lift out their syrup can and then put a paper plate over the hole where the syrup can was so they wouldn't escape. And then you take that box with all those swarming bees and reach in there and take out the little queen cage. Hang on to that, slip that in your pocket, just close to you. She can't get out. She can't sting you. Just put it in a protected place. And then take that package of bees and wrap it on the table so they all fell to the bottom of their box and dump them into your hive. Shake it, dump it, rattle it out, and they'll just kind of flow out. They'll just flow like a big pouring into that box. And then you take your queen and fasten her inside with one of the frames that are already in there and close the box up and leave them alone. Don't bug them for, I think, 3 or 4 days. Just let them be and settle in.
I would be so anxious and so curious and wanting to know what was going on in there. You know, like peeking, going, okay, are they all in there? Are they still there? Are they still alive? Did you feel some of that anxiety?
I really wanted to slide a mirror down in the bottom underneath where there's access that I could see. But I knew that they were fine. They hadn't escaped. And if you can get close enough, you can actually put your ear on the outside and you can hear a steady hum.
Once the bees get into the hive, the community begins their work.
When you're starting out like that, their home is pretty much just studs and sheetrock. They don't have any honeycomb built because they haven't had the chance to make the wax to build the honeycomb. So the queen has a place to lay, so they have a place to put the pollen and the honey if it's ready. So it's really important to keep a logbook as to what date you installed the package, what date you peeked in and saw how far they were on their progress. Let's say that you put your bees in, and a week later you looked in to see how many frames they had started to build honeycomb on. If they had only had the chance to build up 2 frames with honeycomb, then I wouldn't bother again for 3 weeks, because the more you disturb them, they have a setback on getting back into action.
In the hive, each bee has a job to do. Let's begin with the queen. What is her purpose?
Her job is to lay eggs. She can lay up to 1,500 eggs a day. So she needs a nursery, quick-like. So that's what they do right away.
So there's a time that she is just ready to mate. And does she have several other bees that she can mate with, or how does that all take place?
From what I understand, is a package of bees that is sold by an apiary, that queen has already been mated before she was put in the package with her workers. She had already made that mating flight, so she won't leave your hive again.
So she mates once and she can still lay 15,000 eggs a day?
She can lay 1,500 a day, but still, that's a lot of eggs. Yeah, I don't know how it happens, but she's has all the eggs she needs and all the sperm that she's collected on her mating flights that will last her lifetime, which is usually 2 to 3 years.
Basically, in the group of bees, there's roles. The queen bee lays the eggs. The worker bees takes care of the queen. The worker bees, are they all males? Are they all females?
The worker bees are all females, always. And there are occasional males called drones. And the queen decides in her egg-laying process if she's going to lay an egg that is fertilized. She'll either lay a worker egg or a drone egg. And when the drone hatches, all he does is wander about the hive, eat honey, eat pollen, and on nice days, he'll fly away and see if there's any queens out there that he can mate with.
It sounds like a very hard job.
Yes, and that's why there are very few compared to the worker bees. Like this time of year, I'm estimating that my hive in the end of summer has 60,000 worker bees, 1 queen, and I suppose several hundred drone. Now, when fall comes, the worker bees know that the drones are just there taking up space, eating up the pantry, and they will actually kick out the drones. So there will be no drones to feed over the winter.
So over the winter, and we have very harsh winters here, what happens to the hive?
There's 4 things that a hive needs. It needs to have a young queen, which is less than 3 years old. They need to have an adequate food supply of honey and pollen. They need to be protected from the wind. So I do vinyl wrap on my hive, black vinyl, that supposedly will help attract the sun, but I don't know if that warmth can travel through the woodenware of the hives, but I do wrap it to keep the wind off. And then they need to be free of any parasites, especially mites.
There are several options for getting rid of mites. Kim uses oxalic acid.
Product that I use is actually in a powdered form, and it is placed in a little heating element that holds a half a teaspoon of the powder. It's on a metal wand that has like a little spoon that would heat up, and you hook it to a lawn tractor battery, and you let that run for 6 minutes after you've closed all the holes and made it pretty much airtight, so those fumes will stay in there. And oxalic acid doesn't harm the bees, but it does harm the mites, and that's what we want.
So now we get into the part of honey. When can you harvest the honey?
The bees start collecting honey in June, and it'll run through the end of August. Our group here in Montana, they have chosen to leave their honey supers, and that's a box that's just to collect honey. The queen usually won't go into a super because it's stacked higher than the brood chamber that she's used to. So the honey supers can stay on until the end of August, and then we harvest first week in September before it gets too cold. And then also, you need to allow the bees time to collect more honey for themselves so they can winter. So it's two boxes of brood of living, the queen and her family is in the bottom two boxes. And the third box on top, which probably weighs almost 100 pounds, will be full of honey and pollen for them for their winter stores.
Oh, obviously during the summer, there are just more flowers, which means there's more pollen. So is activity usually busier in the summer months versus like early spring or fall?
Activity now is off the charts. They'll come shooting in, you know, they're full of honey, full of pollen. They'll just make a race to that front door to go in and hurry unload and then run back out and get some more honey. So yeah, it's quite active. If you were to walk in front of the hives, you'd have to dodge bees because they're on a mission, bringing their food back. They're busy.
So when you look at the bees, first of all, can you tell the difference between a drone versus a worker versus a queen? And what are the differences of how they look?
After you've sat and looked at them and watched them for days on end like I have, you get to know what a drone looks like. He's big and puffy, and he looks like a big medicine capsule, rounded on both ends and two great big eyes. The workers are smaller and tidier and efficient. And honestly, I've never seen my queen because I don't open it up to look for her, but she does have a longer abdomen and she is larger than the workers. You can definitely tell a drone from a worker because they are louder too. If you hear one buzz by your head and they're loud and boisterous, that's the drone.
Mother Nature is very consistent sometimes in how she produces her species. So, you know, the various different hives, you can go on a piece of property and there are various hives. So each hive basically is its own family and they just exist, they subsist happily by themselves.
They do. I read a book where it said like a colony is in itself one living organism. They go by the direction of the queen, yet all the workers in harmony know what's going on through all parts of their hive. They communicate with their antennae. And when the bees are first born, they crawl out of their cell ready to go to work. And I've read where they crawl out of the cell, turn around and start cleaning out the cell that they were in to tidy that up to get it ready for the queen to lay another egg there. And then they'll have nursing duties where they feed the young, or when they're young or old enough, then it's time to cap the cells. They just work in just a wonderful wheel of getting the job done without arguing.
Well, I think it's because they just instinctually know what to do. So it's nobody needs to tell them. They just know genetically that it's just in them. Okay, lifespan. A queen lives for how long?
A queen can live to be productive and a good egg layer. She should probably not be kept for more than 3 years.
So what happens to the queen when temperatures go down here in Montana and snow covers the landscape?
Well, in the winter, she actually stops laying eggs because she doesn't want any more population. She's only has so much food in the pantry. So she'll stop laying eggs And what the workers actually do is they make a cluster ball around her. She's in the center of this cluster, and that's the warmth that keeps the hive alive during the winter months. They'll move throughout the hive, throughout the box, to go where their honey and their food stores are, but she won't lay any eggs in the winter. But what signals her in the spring is the dandelion bloom. I used to cuss the dandelions because I thought they were weeds, but they are actually the first pollen that the bees gather to take back to the queen and her young eggs so they can start populating, getting ready for spring.
Kim did create a second hive. With a queen at its prime by 2 to 3 years, decisions and plans need to be made for the hive's futures.
In the winter, I have one hive that I will choose to save over the winter. The second hive, that was my honey-producing hive, that has the old queen in it. She's been around for 2 years. She's laid a whole bunch of eggs. She's not going to have a big store of food for her and her workers. So honestly, you starve them out and don't protect them from the wind. Just let them be cold, which makes them eat more of their food. And it is awful, but this past winter, I think it was early February, that colony was still alive because I would rap on the side of the woodenware, and I could hear them in there in their nice little cluster buzzing. And I knew that this queen had to go, so I actually lifted the lid.
Welcome back to our conversation with beekeeper Kim Mueller.
I didn't ask you this, but as far as carrying the pollen, how do bees carry pollen?
If you're sitting at the hive and watching, you can see that they actually have pollen pockets on their back legs. They land on a flower and they gather that pollen with their front legs, pass it to their middle legs, and then the middle legs go ahead and put it in the pollen pockets on their rear legs. And if you're watching, you can see them come flying home with yellow, orange, green, sometimes even lilac-colored pollen. And then I've read and I've heard that when the bee lands there with their pockets full of pollen, some workers will come out and help empty those pollen pockets so that same bee can head out to that same flower.
When you do harvest your honey, approximately how much do you get?
You know, the first year that I had my single colony and everything was new, and I wanted to make sure that they had enough honey for themselves for the winter, because she was my only queen, she was my only colony, I was able to harvest 14 cups of honey. I was thrilled with it, and every precious drop was just like liquid sunshine. Now, last year, with my two colonies, because I had raised a queen, and that was the queen that was going to be to keep her workers to go over the winter, and I got 80 cups of honey.
Congratulations. That is just a lot of honey. So when you get the honey, do you basically drip it out, or do you have to, you know, centrifuge it? How do you get the honey?
The biggest deal about getting the honey is getting the bees off the frames so you can take the honey into your garage or wherever you're going to take it and to extract the honey. If I wouldn't have my son, I wouldn't be doing this, because he's strong enough that he's able to come out and help me lift the honey supers. I use a fume board where you spray this product that somewhat smells like vanilla, but not really. And you spray it on this board, set it on top of the hive, and the bees aren't going to like it and they're going to leave. That's their property and they don't want anybody to take it. When we finally have it off the hive, I take my boxes of honey and I put it in my garage, and hopefully it's still warm. The honey extracts out of the frames much better when you have it 90 degrees. Now, I purchased a hand crank extractor that holds two frames, and my son and I just make a day of it. We take the frame and I just use my kitchen knife and cut the caps off of the top of the combs, and then two frames fit in my extractor. And we hand crank that out. And just that process just gives me a wonderful feeling, because I'm taking product that the bees of the summer gathered for the last couple months. I just get a chill thinking about it, because it's so precious. That's their whole livelihood. It's a process that takes all day to extract, and I put it in a big 5-gallon bucket, and then I bottle individually in 16-ounce containers. So I bottle it one day, and then the next day I save for cleanup. I take my extractor and I put it in my shower with hot water and rinse it out, because it's a big deal. It's a big honey mess, but it's wonderful.
So now you have your honey. Do you eat it raw? Do you use it for your cooking?
You know, I have not used my honey for cooking. I usually have it on a piece of over-buttered toast and some honey, or peanut butter and honey sandwich. Honestly, I really haven't traded out my granulated sugar for honey, because I think it's too precious. I want to eat it right off the spoon.
I love that answer, because it's very much, it's the summer, enjoying the summer harvest. You know, tomatoes are best when they're picked off the vine. You go out there, and even corn, it's almost like you want to just peel the husk off and just bite into it, because the sugar level is so great. But
yes,
it is that summer. You're harvesting your summer harvest.
Yes, you're harvesting sunshine. I got a chill again just thinking about that.
Now let's step outside to see where liquid sunshine is made. In the middle of her yard, there are two hives. Kim has stretched an awning covering two vertical stacks looking like wood filing cabinets stacked on top of each other. From a bottom opening, bees fly in and out.
I did tell them that you were coming and we wouldn't intrude. We're just going to watch and visit a little bit. And they're fine with that.
Okay, let's go see the bees. What kind of bees are these?
Italian. No, seriously, they're Italian bees. The Italians, they say, are not as aggressive. And that's what my supplier had in Minnesota, was Italian. So that's what I chose.
From Warden, we now head to the Last Chance Pub and Cider Mill on Montana Avenue in Billings to the monthly meeting of the Yellowstone Valley Beekeepers. On this Tuesday night of the month, we meet up with longtime beekeeper Lonnie Larson and Lindsay Hoffman, beekeeper and co-owner of the Cider Mill. In the middle of August this summer, a severe hailstorm came through a 12-mile stretch between Billings and Shepherd, leaving damage in its path. We talked to Lonnie Larson.
What area of town are you in?
I'm not in Billings. I live down between Warden and Huntley.
Did you get hit with that hail?
Yes, big time. Lost all my windows in the house on the west side of the house and beat up my trucks. And yeah, they're about 2 inches in diameter that hit us.
And how are your bees?
It blew the hives over, some of them. Now, the winds were tremendous, so some of them tipped over, and so I had to put them all back together again. They were a little grouchy about that. They didn't like that.
So how did you get involved with this Beekeepers Association?
Well, I was asking around trying to find if there was a group anywhere just to learn more about it, and I found out that there was a group. They'd met at different places. They met at the grocery store before Good Earth closed. They'd met at a realtor's office in the back room. They'd been bouncing around the city, and so eventually we ended up at the library. There was probably 6 or 7 that showed up on a pretty regular basis, and now it's grown to about 50.
What happens at a Beekeepers Association meeting?
Like this month, August, okay, what should you be doing with your bees? What should you be seeing as far as, and then we talk about the health issues that are out there, the treatments that you need to be thinking about. Now it's time to start getting ready for winter and keep them through the whole winter time and hopefully have them come out alive come spring.
Does it become also a place where you have time during the meeting that people can talk about what maybe issues they're having?
Yeah, we have a basic meeting that I go over different things of where you should be at, and then it's opened up to the floor basically for issues and problems and questions.
So this is open for people of all abilities as far as beekeeping goes?
Anybody in the public can come. If you just have a curiosity and you're thinking about you would like to maybe get into bees, it's important for you to come and learn what you're getting yourself into. It sounds like a hobby, it sounds really neat, but there's a lot of work involved. And so people, sometimes they show up for a few meetings and decide, you know, this is way more work than I really want to get into.
My question to you is, why did you start beekeeping?
It always fascinated me, okay? They've got their own society, and I learned a little of that when I was in high school, but being a high school kid, things go right past you. You don't really realize what you're, some of the unique things that are going on. And for me, you have to be calm when you're around them. And daily life, you can get all twisted up in yourself. And if you go out all twisted up and you go get around your bees, they're aggressive. They'll get after you. They're banging on your face or banging on your mask. They can sense that you're tense. You walk away, shake it off, walk back out there calm. They could care less if you're there. They'd go about their business and leave you alone. So it's kind of a zen thing. You just kind of relax. And if you're relaxed around them, they're relaxed. Now, the other night when the wind blew over the hives, they were mad. They were upset. And they let me know that this was not what they liked. I mean, I had bees all over me, and they were aggressive. They wanted a piece of me.
After all these years, Lonnie Larson has obviously learned to find zen with his bees. We now talk to Lindsay Hoffman, businesswoman and mother, who has also found satisfaction in raising these busy insects.
I became a beekeeper about 3 years ago, and really we planted 500 apple trees in our backyard and we built a house. We had a baby, started a business, and I decided something for me was beekeeping. I'm an avid gardener. I've always loved nature, and bees fit. I started reading about them and fell in love. I started coming to meetings, and I knew right away after I went to the first meeting, I was like, this is it.
So the apple trees that you planted are also used for the cider that you make here.
Yes, that's correct. Yep, we've planted 500 over the past 3 years, and it's kind of a test plot to see what apples grow well in Red Lodge.
How many bees do you have?
Right now I have 3 hives, and each hive has several thousand bees.
Are there special kinds of apples that the bees prefer, or you want honey from those particular bees?
No, not necessarily. I think I'm not a beekeeper to pollinate just our apples. You know, they're helping the apples, but we also have hop vines for the brewery, but also they're after all the wildflowers and the grasses and the trees in our area too, so.
And what are you doing with your honey?
Last year, actually, I had 2 hives, and I harvested 70 pounds of honey. And most of that I gave away to friends and family. But this year, I think I'll have quite a bit more. And we're going to start brewing a couple of our beers with our honey. So the Bruno's is one of our beers that has honey in it, and we'll probably use it for that.
Do you have any tips for anybody that's getting into beekeeping?
Yes, I would definitely go to a local club, find out if your area has a club. You know, most of them meet once a month. Ours meets the second Tuesday of every month here at Last Chance Pub and Cider Mill. And then I'd also read up on it. The Beekeeping for Dummies is the best book, and I love reading it. It's a book that I love. But you keep reading, keep talking to beekeepers, and try it out.
Bees feed the world. They transport pollen for about 1/3 of the farm crops to produce seeds. Thanks to Kim Mueller for giving us a primer on beekeeping, and Lonnie Larson and Lindsay Hoffman for sharing how important it is for human beekeepers to form a hive to share knowledge and challenges. Theme music for Flavors Under the Big Sky has been provided by Parker Brown. Additional funding has been provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communications of issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanians. Thanks to you, listeners, for your support. I'm Stella Fong.